Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, August 3rd, 2023. Marfa ISD likely adopting deficit budget for 2023-2024 school year. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. The Marfa ISD Board of Trustees is currently poised to adopt a 2023-2024 school year budget with a deficit of around $1 million or more. The board met this week with Interim Superintendent Arturo Alvarez and Chief Financial Officer Rosella Rivera for the latest in a series of ongoing budget workshops where they discussed legislative updates, bond payments, salary structures for support staff, and approved contracts for six new employees. Board members Teresa Nunez, Lori Flores, Stella Fuentes and Ruben Martinez were present. Members Yolanda Jurado, Renee Gonzalez, and Ernie Villarreal were absent. The district, along with others across the state, is adjusting to recent legislative changes brought about by Senate Bill 2, an $18 billion school property tax relief bill passed during the second special legislative session this July. The largest property tax relief bill ever passed, it included an increase in homestead exemptions from $40,000 to $100,000, which will go up for public vote as a constitutional amendment this coming fall before it can be finalized, and a 10.7-cent reduction for school districts M&O, or maintenance and operations, tax rates. The changes will amount to an average savings of 42% over the next 2 years for Texas homeowners on their school property tax bills, according to a press release from Senator Paul Bettencourt, the bill's primary author. As a result of the legislation, school districts will bring in less money this year from property taxes. Marfa ISD, for example, will be required to lower their tax rate by around 18 cents, the state average, from the previous year. While the state plans to make up for that loss with additional state aid, school district funding is stagnating, not increasing. Legislators have yet to reach agreements on teacher pay raises or an increase in the per-pupil allotment, changes public education advocates, including local Alpine ISD Superintendent Michelle Reinhardt, have voiced strong support for in the wake of inflation and what they call a flawed school funding formula. A public education and school voucher-centered legislative session is anticipated to take place this October. At the Marfa ISD board meeting this week, district leaders were hopeful the coming session would result in a sorely needed influx of state money. As it stands, the district will need to dip into its $3 million fund balance or savings account to cover the roughly $1 million plus deficit. A final budget has yet to be adopted, and the district will hold a meeting in late August to pass the finalized budget and set a tax rate. For now, they are working to make cuts where possible. A new $375,000 school bus would likely need to be grant-funded, as opposed to being funded through a budget allocation. CFO Rivera told the board that making smaller cuts to the budget here and there, to extracurriculars, etc., was only so impactful, and that if the district continues down the road of unsustainable funding, salaries and personnel, which make up larger chunks of the budget, would have to be assessed. We take another hit like this next year, we're in big trouble. The only real place that you're going to bring down the budget is in salaries. That's what it comes down to, said Rivera. Our fund balance depends on the surpluses that we have, and we don't have that much. It's very scary. The district is also making its 2022-2023 school year recapture payments this month. Money MISD is required to send back to the state because it is considered a property-rich district by the state. The latest recapture payment for the last school year was up to $1.7 million from just over $1 million the previous year, according to Rivera. The strategies for paying off the district's remaining bonds was also discussed at length with Dwayne Westerman of Samco Capital, the district's bond advisor. The district has two remaining bonds totaling around $6.3 million to pay off from previous infrastructure projects. In addition to their annual payment of $432,000, the board is assessing options for paying off additional debt, a process referred to as defeasance. The district leverages an INS, or interest and sinking, 15-cent tax rate to pay off existing debt. They are looking at two options to pay off an additional $500,000 this year, in addition to their annual payment, one which involves more interest savings, roughly $200,000, which the board favored, and one which would totally pay off an existing 2013 bond. So far, the district has made strides towards paying off its debt, with almost $1 million in principal paid off, totaling $440,000 in interest savings. Switching up salary structures in order to create a more transparent, longevity-based system for the district's support staff, including aides, administrators, and custodians, was also discussed. Included in the 2023-2024 budget will be a $910 stipend for all returning employees, money which is coming out of the remainder of the school's ESSER, or pandemic-era federal relief funds, that needs to be spent this year. The board also voted to hire six new teachers at the end of the meeting: a high school history teacher, a junior high math teacher, a special education paraprofessional, a paraprofessional, and two other employees, one with the Industry Career Vocational Education Program, and another with the Disciplinary Alternative Education Program. Photo courtesy of the Fort Davis Fire Department. Scorched terrain in Jeff Davis County due to recent fires, which are under investigation for possible arson by the state. Series of fires in Jeff Davis County under investigation by Texas A&M Forest Service. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Jeff Davis County. A series of four fires that occurred last week in Jeff Davis County with unknown causes are currently under investigation by the Texas A&M Forest Service. The agency will determine whether or not the fires, all which were roadside starts with two occurring last Wednesday and another two occurring Sunday, were accidental or arson. Jim Fowler, a spokesperson for the Fort Davis Volunteer Fire Department, said the investigation was launched due to the fact that the fires occurred in close succession during times when weather conditions weren't particularly dangerous. Certainly four fires without thunderstorms on days without wind are concerning. They may not be suspicious, but it's certainly concerning, said Fowler. It could be catalytic converters, or somebody tossed a cigarette butt while parked on the side of the road, or any of those possible causes, but we are investigating because the number that we're seeing is quite large, he added. The first two fires occurred last Wednesday, one near Madera Canyon by Lawrence E. Woods Roadside Park, burned less than an acre. The other, coined the Rock Pile Fire, occurred on Highway 166 near Highway 118, burned around 180 acres of rugged terrain. The Texas A&M Forest Service was called in to assist with the Rock Pile Fire, and no structures were threatened. A few days later, on Sunday, two additional fires broke out near the Brewster-Jeff Davis County line on Highway 118. Both were put out quickly and were confined to less than an acre. Assisting in the recent firefighting efforts, in addition to the Fort Davis Volunteer Fire Department, were local crews from the Davis Mountains Resort, Cherry Creek, McDonald's Observatory, and the Alpine Fire Department. Fowler said because the fires began on highway right-of-ways, which are state property, the Texas A&M Forest Service, a state agency, will conduct the investigation, assessing burn patterns and more. A timeline for when the investigation will conclude has not yet been provided, said Fowler. If causes are ruled accidental, an educational campaign about fire danger or other preventative measures may need to be taken, said Fowler. We either need to work on fire prevention and notifying people not to park their cars on the right-of-way, said Fowler, or if there are any other concerns, we will have to address those. On Wednesday afternoon, there was an additional brush fire located near the solar park, but crews from the observatory in Fort Davis were able to put out the flames quickly and determined the cause of the fire was electrical, likely due to power lines and the heavy storms in the area, according to Fowler. Photo courtesy of the Fort Davis Fire Department. Sebastian Flores, wildland capitan for the Fort Davis Fire Department, walks Judge Curtis Evans through the process of assessing the origins of a fire and its spread. There have been four fires in Jeff Davis County in the past week without clear causes, prompting an investigation by the Texas A&M Forest Service. Photo courtesy of the fire department. We see a pickup driving through burnt territory, and we see smoke rising. Blackwell School Alliance seeks city support in transition to National Historic Site. By Allegra Hobbs, ALLAGRA at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa. At last week's regular Marfa City Council meeting, representatives from the Blackwell School Alliance and the National Parks Service, NPS, provided updates on the Blackwell School as it moves towards its establishment as a National Historic Site and made a request for support from the city in the process. The adobe structure, which served as a segregated schoolhouse for Mexican-American students from 1909 to 1965, was designated a National Historic Site in October of last year when President Biden signed the Blackwell School National Historic Site Act into law. It was a long-sought victory for members of the Alliance, a group of alumni and supporters devoted to preserving the site and documenting its history. But the site will not be officially established as a National Historic Site until the land is transferred from the Marfa Independent School District, which leases the site to the Blackwell School Alliance, to the federal government. That process, while inching forward, has been tangled in legal red tape, explained Martha Stafford, a representative of the Alliance and the National Parks Conservation Association, NPCA. The land transfer from the school is very complicated and is taking a lot longer than we had originally thought, said Stafford. But their attorneys are working on it, so we know it will happen. It's just a matter of time. In the meantime, the Alliance has partnered with the NPS and the NPCA as it prepares for that transition and is seeking the city's input as well. The establishment of a National Historic Site in Marfa will likely draw more visitors to the area. It will inevitably have an impact on the city of Marfa, said Stafford, in really positive ways. That being the case, the city's input on matters such as roads and traffic around the school could be instrumental. You also know Marfa, and I think that's important that we have people who have been here a really long time, and they understand Marfa. They understand there are a lot of inner workings, said Stafford. The alliance is seeking the city's involvement in a fairly informal capacity, she explained. Maybe in the form of a panel to bounce ideas around and provide input on the site's development. David Larson, superintendent for the Fort Davis National Historic Site, explained they are looking to set up biweekly calls to discuss next steps as the transition moves forward. While council members expressed interest, the city council agenda item was a discussion item only, so there was no vote as to a course of action. More immediately, the Blackwell School will host two open houses on August 10th and 17th, both at 6 p.m. Alliance President Daniel Hernandez will be present to discuss next steps, as will NPS representatives. As the property transfers ownership and falls under the purview of the federal government, the Alliance will remain involved as a friends group, said Stafford. The Alliance isn't going away, she said. Mexican Consulate Launches Anti-Trafficking Campaign by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Presidio. This Sunday, the Presidio branch of the Consulate of Mexico observed World Day of Trafficking in Persons, a United Nations-led initiative to raise awareness of human trafficking and forced labor around the world. The consulate hosted presentations and distributed informational materials in its hometown community of Presidio and on the road in Midland and Odessa. The Corazón Azul, or Blue Heart, campaign teaches folks how to identify and report trafficking cases. Victims of trafficking are deprived of their liberty and forced to perform domestic labor, agricultural work, or sex work, a campaign presentation explains. It's a form of modern slavery. Worldwide, activists and leaders have sounded the alarm as rates of trafficking-related crimes rise and detection rates drop. Trafficking cases that make it into a courtroom have risen by more than 84% over the past decade, but less than half of victims who escape on their own decide to report their experiences to the authorities. The United Nations attributes some of these statistics to global migration and supply chain shifts in the wake of the pandemic. The COVID-19 pandemic changed the characteristics of trafficking, pushing it further underground and potentially increasing the dangers to victims by making the crime less likely to come to the attention of the authorities, reads a report launching the 2023 International Blue Heart Initiative. Government agencies and nonprofit organizations in Mexico have identified human trafficking as a particularly serious problem. Both Mexican citizens and migrants moving through or from Mexico into the United States are particularly vulnerable. Statistics show that the northern states of Baja California, Chihuahua, and Nuevo León are hubs for the trafficking of individuals from Mexico into the United States. The Citizens Council for Security and Justice in Mexico City recently released their annual report on human trafficking, which found that these crimes primarily affect women and children. 50% of reported victims are minors, and 70% of them are female. Echoing the findings of the UN report, the Citizens Council found that the pandemic had pushed traffickers underground and potentially online, where children were particularly vulnerable to exploitation. The virtual world has distinguished itself as a risky space, the report reads. Strengthening digital hygiene and cybersecurity is one of the challenges of institutions in eradicating modern slavery. The Consulate of Mexico serves Mexican citizens living, working, and traveling in the United States. The Presidio branch's presentations locally and in Midland, Odessa, spoke to the unique needs of West Texas, namely the risks posed to border communities in the heart of oil country. Alejandro Alba traveled with the Consulado Mobile mobile consulate to Midland, Odessa this past weekend, where people lining up for consular services were also given information about human trafficking and the opportunity to ask questions. He was surprised by the amount of interest generated by the Corazon Azul campaign. Some Consulado Mobile attendees even shared their own experiences and those of friends and neighbors. Alba helped detail the consular resources available to victims of human trafficking and those trying to help them. Sometimes people think that if they are Mexicans in the USA, they cannot call the police or other organizations, he said. We explained to them that that's not the case. The materials Alba distributed offered a few questions to help folks identify if they or someone they know is a victim of human trafficking. Are your wages little or none? Are you free to go where you want? Are you permitted to communicate with your relatives and friends? They also outlined some basic questions to ask before accepting work in the United States, something many consular clients are desperate for. Find out all the details of your job, information about the company, and look for references, one pamphlet reads. Don't trust an employer if they promise you will make large amounts of money without many details. At the presentation in Presidio, Celia Arzaga of the Border Network for Human Rights called for widespread education and awareness around the issue, especially among migrants. We know that human trafficking exists, but we also know that not everyone has the same opportunities to get work, she said. For that reason, migrants are vulnerable to becoming victims of criminal organizations. She felt that working to eradicate human trafficking was right in line with her organization's mission, to protect border residents' liberty and humanity. The Border Network focuses on educating the migrant community to change our society so that it may be equitable and everyone can have the same dignity and respect, she said. Three historic Tri-County hotels are slated for renovation as tourism climbs by Allegra Hobbs. Allegra at BigBenSentinel.com. Tri-County. Three historic hotels in Alpine and Fort Davis could be undergoing major renovations under new ownership beginning later this year. A move to revitalize the roughly century-old structures, according to stakeholders, and to capitalize on a regional boom in tourism. Local business groups in both cities, meanwhile, are hoping the improvement of lodging and amenity options will help revitalize the struggling downtowns. Austin-based Byways Hospitality, which specializes in boutique hotels, is under contract to purchase the Holland Hotel and Maverick Inn in Alpine and the Hotel Olympia in Fort Davis from current owner Charles Mallory. The hospitality group is partnering with a team of architects, designers, and restaurateurs, including Morgan Weber and Vincent Nguyen of Marfa Spirit Company, to carry out renovations, construct new amenities, and overhaul the food and drink offerings at the sites. Post Oak Preservation has been contracted to oversee the preservation of the historic architecture. Mallory, a Connecticut-based hotelier who has owned the properties for about a decade and plans to stay attached as a general partner, said he saw the project as an opportunity to actualize a long-term vision to improve the aging structures rather than simply preserve them. That's what I'm excited about, the potential to really make these hotels noteworthy and significant sort of landmarks in the communities, said Mallory. This is really the moment to do it. We've preserved them and actually turned the lights back on in some cases, so I feel like I've brought them to this moment where they can really move forward. Plans for the hotels are preliminary, and the team is currently in the phase of raising the necessary funds from investors. Byways co-founder Colin Bibb, who recently moved to Alpine himself, said the group is approaching local investors. Under the current plan, which was presented to the Alpine Business Alliance at a public meeting last week, the Holland Hotel will undergo a renovation of its ballroom and lobby bar. The hotel's current restaurant, the Century Bar and Grill, will be converted into a coffee shop, while a new restaurant will be built on the other side of the hotel. The restaurant, per the presentation, will provide an upscale take on Texas ranch cuisine, while the bar will boast an expansive whiskey and cigar collection. Bibb said the goal for the Holland is to provide updated furniture and fixtures that also feel true to the roots of the historic property. These hotels have served Alpine and their Tri-County area for over 100 years, and we just want to enable it to serve tourists and the community for the next 100 years, said Bibb. So we're providing updated furniture that kind of seems like it might fit West Texas in the 1930s and 40s. The Maverick will undergo lighter improvements to its common spaces and rooms and could be outfitted with an expanded pool deck. The team plans to buy the property behind the inn to add more units, said Bibb. Under the current plan, that property would potentially contain 20 shipping container units for additional guests. The space between the hotel and the additional units could serve as a courtyard and gathering space for programming, said Bibb. Compared to the Holland Hotel and the Hotel Olympia, said Bibb, the Maverick Inn will provide a lower price point option for travelers. Changes to the Hotel Olympia in Fort Davis, which will also receive upgraded furniture and fixtures, renovated hotel rooms, and the addition of 10 new ones, center around a mission to provide enjoyable outdoor space for visitors, said Bibb, with an expanded courtyard, upgraded pool, and outdoor seating for a new hotel restaurant. While the property is currently split in two by a road, Bibb said the team is hoping to make that road available to emergency vehicles only, allowing for a more cohesive outdoor space. Byways is also under contract to buy the nearby Harvard Hotel, currently owned by Jeff Davis County Commissioner and Fire Marshal Roy Hurley, which they hope to use for additional rooms at a lower price point. A timeline for construction on the projects is tentative and dependent on the securing of funds, but Bibb said he's optimistic they can raise the remaining equity in the next 2 months, then hopefully break ground in October. The prospect of entering the hotel business in the Big Bend region is, at the moment, an attractive one, said Bibb. Tourism in the region is climbing. The group's presentation notes that visitation to the national park has grown 7% per year since 2012, and that total hotel spending has grown 12% per year during that same time. There's a lot of excitement surrounding the project, and I think it has a lot of interesting financial aspects, too, which underwrites really well for investors, just by nature of the fact that the Big Bend area in general and the Tri-County area has had such solid growth, not only from a tourism perspective, but also from a hotel growth perspective, said Bibb. Jim Street, president of the Alpine Business Alliance, is an enthusiastic supporter of the plan, hoping the revitalization and expansion of local hotels will in turn revitalize Alpine's ailing local economy, which was hit hard by the COVID-19 pandemic and is still struggling to recover. Street said that in an earlier survey, the ABA counted 32 empty storefronts, but said that number has since grown. There's an entire half block, half of the 100 block of North 5th Street, that's totally empty, he said. Part of the problem, he acknowledged, is the high cost of rent, a problem that will not be solved by hotel renovations. But he believes the increased foot traffic will help Alpine get back on its feet. The hotels will attract visitors downtown. It absolutely will help, he continued. Of course, the more people are downtown shopping, the more likely people will be to open shops and cater to that business. Regan Stone, executive director of the Fort Davis Chamber of Commerce, described Fort Davis as a place on the up and up since the pandemic. "We have the highest occupancy rate that we've ever had. That means since COVID and before. So we have a lot of folks coming into town right now," said Stone. Like Street, he sees the hotel properties targeted for upgrades as an opportunity to capitalize on that boom in visitation. "We want to have the amenities to be able to make sure that tourists and visitors have restaurants and other types of amenities to be able to have a pleasurable time while they're visiting," he said. The planned renovations are part of a larger hotel boom in the region as hoteliers move to harness the climbing visitation numbers. Liz Lambert is currently undertaking the relocation and expansion of El Cosmico. Hotelier Tim Crowley, operator of the Hotel St. George, has plans to build two new hotels in or near Marfa and is looking to premiere 320-acre event space, the High Frontier in Fort Davis, next year. "My view is really that if we want to take Fort Davis to the next level, it's going to be outside investment, like the Byways possibility or the High Frontier as well," said Stone. "So we're really excited to see that."
Burke's Outlet Fort Stockton location rebrands as Beals. Shoppers looking for Burke's Outlet might have noticed a change at the Fort Stockton location over the past several months. Burke's Outlet made the switch to Beals in May as part of a company rebranding of the 600 Beals Outlet and Burke's locations in 23 states. "A lot of people think that it's the same Beals that it used to be before," said store manager Erica Gomez. "Our company purchased the name Beals completely in March, so they're changing all the stores, what's considered Beals Outlet and Burke's Outlet, to just Beals, but with a lowercase b. All stores nationwide will make the switch by the end of this year. The original Beals, Inc. now operates exclusively in Florida and is known as Beals Department Store, or simply Beals, and is changing to Beals Florida to distance itself from the traditional department store model. Beals, Inc. is headquartered in Bradenton, Florida, near Tampa. The word outlet was removed from the new store because of confusion by shoppers who thought the store was sold cheap merchandise. But it's not cheap, Gomez said. It's still good quality clothes as regular Beals was. We've had a lot of customers think that it's cheap merchandise, but it's not. We do have name brands, and this expansion, they're wanting to expand to more name brands. Right now, we're carrying a lot of Nike clothes from your head to your toes, basically at an affordable price, and that's what Beals is now, something affordable. Gomez added that individuals who have a Beals Stage credit card can still order online, but the original Beals location is in existence are in Florida, so customers here will need to get a new store card. The store offers awards programs. It's just exactly the same as Beals, but it tends to help you out more. The Fort Stockton Beals location is located at 1700 West Dickinson. Dear Editor, what is woke? If you ask a person who claims to be woke, they may say it's their awareness of social injustice and a need to work against it. In reality, under the guise of woke, this person will accept corruption of the DOJ, judges, criminal courts, and the military. Under the pretense of progressive, they'll accept socialism, election fraud, and illegal migration, while rejecting the First and Second Constitutional Amendments. The woke often disparage Jews and Christians while supporting division of families with immoral education that promotes sexualized children and racial divides. The woke support euthanasia, sexual mutilation of children, and defend 1,000 daily abortions. The legalized harmful use of drugs is another woke agenda. The woke leaders, voted into office by their woke followers, weaken the U.S. with appeasement to enemies of America, climate change nonsense, open borders, and a printing of inflationary dollars. Woke leaders demonize tens of millions of Americans who point out their harmful actions. To paraphrase a former POTUS, the trouble with the woke isn't that they're ignorant, it's just that they know so much that isn't so. Signed, James R. LeBlanc, Fort Davis. County replaces Kyonosa Fire with Fort Stockton. The number of Fort Stockton volunteer firefighters who work in Kyonosa has prompted the recommendation by Pecos County to add a substation of the Fort Stockton Fire Department to the Kyonosa area. They've got about 6 or 7 employees who work in the area, said Joe Schuster. The substation of the Fort Stockton VFD in Kyonosa would give those employees the ability to respond to a fire in the area, go to the station already in Kyonosa, get the equipment, and fight the fire. We've talked it over with the companies that they work for, and they're okay with that, Schuster added. Hopefully we can get started with the idea of the substation there, and we can get some interest in some of the people that live in Kyonosa to come and join us so that they can be members of the Fort Stockton substation out there in Kyonosa. We could possibly build that into a fire station for itself without Fort Stockton, but it's going to take a while. The judge believes having the substation could motivate Kyonosa residents to have their own station. The court approved allowing the Pecos County Water Control and Improvement District to cut East 46th Lane in Precinct 4 to add a water line, allowed the city of Irahan to store 100 portable cots for the city's emergency management coordinator at the old sheriff's office building, approved the predator control report from Wildlife Services, which reported removing 14 coyotes, 73 feral hogs, and 1 red fox during the month of June from various ranches in Pecos County. The 45-minute meeting July 24th was in stark contrast to the 3-hour meeting July 10th, with most of that time taken up by awarding bids for building repairs from damage incurred during the October 10th hailstorm and flood that ravaged Pecos County. Most county buildings in every precinct were damaged. The bids were unsealed July 5th, and most of the bids awarded July 10th went to Basin Roofing. Precinct 1 buildings, 6 Forest Service trailers to Basin Roofing, Hangar 3 to Basin Roofing, Hangar 4 to Basin Roofing, Hangar 4 cart shed to Sunbelt Insulation and Roofing, Helicopter Hangar to Basin Roofing, Pecos County Civic Center to Basin Roofing, Sheriff's Office and Jail to Basin Roofing, Volunteer Fire Station to Basin Roofing, Fire Station Storage Building Bid awarded to Basin Roofing, Industrial Park Emergency Building awarded to Basin Roofing, Precinct 2 Buildings, Rooney Park Pool and Pavilion awarded to Basin Roofing, Rooney Park Lodge Community Hall to Basin Roofing, Rooney Park Small Community Hall to Basin Roofing, Rooney Park Barbecue Pit No. 3 to Basin Roofing. Precinct 3 repairs include the 4-H Building, Radio Building, Sheriff's Building, Swimming Pool Building, and Dressing Rooms, Announcer's Booth and Softball Stands and Restrooms, and Booth, Pearl Restrooms, Barbecue Pits, Metal Cover and Tables, Storage Building, Boy Scout House, Precinct 3 Office. All repairs were awarded to Basin Roofing. Precinct 4 repairs were awarded to Basin Roofing to include the Kyonosa Office and Library, Fort Stockton Office and Garage, Imperial Public Library, Imperial Office. Precinct 2 repairs were for Midland Pecos Groundwater and the Courthouse Annex for the Juvenile Detention Center. Scholarship fundraiser launched for BRI grad students. Borderlands Research Institute, BRI, at Sol Ross State University in Alpine is launching a scholarship fundraiser for its graduate students. The funding goal is $50,000, with all proceeds going directly to scholarships for students working on conservation research for their master's degree. To kickstart the fundraiser, the Permian Basin Area Foundation has generously donated a $15,000 challenge grant. Our students are our top priority, and we're supporting the next generation of conservation practitioners and leaders with this grant, said Dr. Lewis Harverson, Dean, who is the Dan Allen Hughes Endowed Director of BRI. These master's projects play a vital role in the Trans-Pecos conservation, and scholarship funds are a critical piece of our students' success. We're hopeful that through generous donations, we can hit our goal of $50,000. The Borderlands Research Institute is a leader in wildlife and conservation research in the Trans-Pecos region of West Texas and is celebrating its 15-year anniversary during the coming academic calendar year. Graduate and undergraduate students enrolled in BRI research programs experience unique opportunities to work side by side with wildlife professionals and conservation partners. These students receive hands-on experience with habitat restoration projects and working with wildlife, including grassland birds, pronghorn, mule deer, and more. Current projects include the first large-scale black bear research project to be conducted in West Texas. This multi-year project is tracking the expansion of black bears into the region and will help wildlife managers better understand their ecology and needs. Earlier this year, BRI researchers, with help from Texas Parks and Wildlife Department and local landowners, embarked on a long-term desert bighorn sheep project to study the interactions and competition pressures between bighorn, odad, and mule deer. Additionally, BRI students are working on multiple habitat restoration projects as they investigate the best methodologies to enhance land suffering from drought and brush encroachment. What they learn will be shared with area land stewards. Students who graduate from these programs receive a master's in range and wildlife management from Sol Ross State University. These graduates gain employment with state and federal resource agencies, as well as with private consultants and ranches and as educators. Currently, BRI graduates influence wildlife management decisions on over 31 million acres in Texas, some 20% of the state's acreage. FSISD registration begins August 2nd. The 23-24 school year begins August 14th, and registration for the upcoming year will begin at all campuses on August 2nd. Registration for ISD students will be starting at 8 a.m., and K-12 students, returning and noon, can register online at the district's webpage at fsisd.net/2023registration. Parents enrolling students in pre-K will need to register in person at the Apache Elementary campus. All four Stockton campuses will also be conducting in-person online registration at their campuses during the following times: Wednesday, August 2nd from 8 to 4, Thursday, August 3rd, 8 to 7, Friday, August 4th, 8 to 4, Tuesday, August 8th, 8 to 7, Wednesday, August 9th, 8 to 4, Thursday, August 10th, 8 to 7. All new and returning students in K-12 will need the following to register: birth certificate, shot records, proof of residence, photo ID, and Social Security card. Pre-K will need to register in person at Apache Elementary as new students and provide the following: birth certificate, shot records, proof of residence, photo ID, Social Security card, and proof of income and or other qualifying condition. Parents that need assistance with registration or do not have access to computers are encouraged to go by their child's school to get assistance. EE, pre-K, kindergarten, and first grade students will attend Apache Elementary. Second and third grade students will attend Alamo Elementary. Fourth and fifth grade students will attend the intermediate school. Sixth, seventh, and eighth grade students will attend the middle school. And freshmen through seniors will attend Fort Stockton High School. Parents who still need to get their child's vaccinations for the 23-24 school year should contact their doctor's office, the Cactus Clinic, or the Pecos County Memorial Hospital for information on vaccinations and clinics. Students must have their vaccinations up to date prior to attending school.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, July 27th. Commissioners approve capital crime defense contract and hot tax. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. The Ward County Commissioners met for a short Monday morning meeting in the Ward County Courthouse. The meeting was called to order, a quorum was established, and the commissioners began working on the agenda items. The commissioners gave approval to accepting a $3,000 donation from Cross Your Heart Ministries, Incorporated, designated for the Ward County Library Projects. They also gave a nod to accepting the agreement with West Texas Centers to ensure the accessibility of mental health and intellectual development disability services when needed. The county agreed to provide funds to the center, totaling $12,696 per year, to assist in maintaining the operations of the Ward County Mental Health Center. The yearly amount will be paid out in monthly payments of $1,058 each month. The center, in return, agrees to provide sufficient staff to offer mental health and intellectual and development disability services in Ward County. The agreement period begins September 1st and terminates August 1st, 2024. Another item approved was the agreement with the Regional Public Defender's Office for capital cases. This agreement is a type of insurance for the county in that the county pays $4,700 to a Lubbock firm that will provide a public defender to defend an indigent capital case. Quote, a capital case can, and often does, carry on for months, and the public defender's lawyer's fee can run upwards of $500,000. And, along with that, all the investigator fees, court cost, and paperwork filing fees can easily total over $1 million. Quote, this firm provides all the personnel and court expenses needed to carry out a capital case trial that, otherwise, the county would have to foot the bill, County Judge Greg Holly said. The commissioners also accepted the agreement with the City of Monahans to receive a tax hotel motel distribution for 2023-2024. The agreement will provide $500,000 assistance for the operational cost of the Ward County Event Center and $50,000 toward the museum complex. Quote, it costs a little less than $1 million a year to keep the center operating. The rentals total approximately $75,000 a year. We want to keep the rental cost down so it is affordable to our local people. We really appreciate the city's help with the event center. It is there for all of us to have available and enjoy, Holly said. Paying the monthly county bill was also approved by the commissioners. Expenses paid include Ward County payroll in the amount of $424,000, courthouse supplies for $450, sheriff's supplies totaled $599, indigent health care for $23,950, mental health at $1,600, senior citizen center supplies for $169, Grand Falls Community Center utilities totaling $85, Grand Falls Library supplies at $206. Also approved was the okay to hire temporary help at the Ward County Senior Center. The position will pay $15 per hour, 40 hours per week for approximately 15 weeks with no benefits. In other regular business, the commissioners voted to approve the last meeting's minutes, voted to accept the hospital budget amendments, approved the officer's report, as well as the treasurer's monthly report and quarterly investment report, gave acknowledgement to the Ward County Sheriff's Trust Account audit, and approved the results of the audit done by Smith and Reeves. Present for the Monday morning meeting at the Ward County Courthouse was Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms, and Judge Greg Holly. Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna was absent from the meeting. The next regularly scheduled commissioners' meeting will be held on Monday, August 14th at 9:30 a.m. in the Ward County Courthouse. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioners' meeting. Pine trees extracted from hospital courtyard in bid to preserve roof. The Ward Memorial Hospital Board of Managers recently decided to remove the pine trees around the hospital grounds. Some of the trees were already dead and posing a property threat from falling. The trees were also creating a potential problem with shedding pine needles on the roof of the hospital. Removing the trees from the hospital's perimeter was not a problem, but the three pine trees in the hospital's inner courtyard proved to be a challenge. The hospital contracted with Will Magura's Innovative Services for $45,000 to remove the trees, kill the stumps, and clean the pine needles from the roof. Finances and performance reports top hospital board meeting. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward Memorial Hospital Board of Managers met Thursday evening at 6:15 in the Physical Therapy Cardio Unit boardroom. A quorum was established with Boyd Barron and Mickey Mitchell absent, and the previous meeting's minutes were approved. Mickey Schaefer, Chief Financial Officer for the hospital, reported to the board the year-to-date financial standing. The hospital is standing at a positive year-to-date $2 million balance. Schaefer and the board discussed the problems with the Medicare Advantage program. Medicare Advantage, which is a privately owned company, not a government program, reimburses much less than government-offered traditional Medicare. Hospital Administrator and CEO Leticia Rodriguez gave the board this example of an explanation, quote, "In the past, we have billed Medicare Advantage $55,000 and received only $8,000 back as reimbursement, leaving the hospital holding the bag on the difference. Insurance companies can really make a dent in our bottom line if they don't reimburse us enough," end quote. Chief Nursing Officer Vince Gore shared the recent Quality Assessment Performance Improvements Report with the Board of Managers. Quote, "Overall, we have had improvement in all areas of medical care. The ER has shown improvement since the last quarter, shorter wait times, courtesy of nurses, doctors' concern for comfort, doctors being informative and including patient in treatment decisions, have all improved in this quarter. Also, the medical record updating has improved, and our nursing services are very good," Gore said. "We have some amazing employees who are a tremendous help in boosting our performance ratings, such as a young man in our sleep study unit, Juan Rodriguez. He has received his sleep study technician certification and is doing an outstanding job." Quote, "The hospital entered into an agreement with him to pay for his education in return for his promise to work for the hospital. Now he is ready to go into his respiratory training to become a licensed respiratory therapist," Rodriguez said. In other business, the board approved paying the hospital's bills, which include a payroll of $368,000, Thursday bills totaling $50,000, Texas County District Retirement System for $107,000. Cash on hand as of July 20th was $9,473,000. Rodriguez also told the board, quote, "The farmers market was a big success. We had approximately 300 people at Hill Park for the event." The board approved other regular business items, such as the previous meeting's minutes and the budget amendments. There were no personnel changes to be made and no citizens' comments to be heard. Board managers present for the Thursday evening meeting were Lisa Stewart, Frank Heslin, Angel Fuentes, Gerald Carlson, John Fawcett, and Jeff Burdick, along with Administrator CEO Leticia Rodriguez. The next regularly scheduled board meeting will be August 10th at 6:15 p.m. in the Ward Memorial Hospital Physical Therapy Cardio Unit Boardroom, located at 420 South Ike Street. The hospital board meets every first and third Thursday of the month at 6:15 p.m. Anyone who would like to address the board about any concerns needs to contact Administrator CEO Leticia Rodriguez at 943-2511, extension 176, to explain their concern and ask to be placed on the next board meeting agenda. Suicidal bird Tripp's emergency generator at City Hall. Public hearing for budget set for August 22nd. The story was written by Smokey Briggs. The lights were on at City Hall when the City Council met on Tuesday at 3 p.m., but earlier in the day, the city's emergency generator was required to keep those lights on after a bird made the fatal mistake of grounding out the transformer that serves the building and blowing the main fuse. City Manager Rex Thee reported the generator kicked on immediately as it was supposed to, and operations continued without a hitch until the fuse could be reset. The council was greeted by a new report in their usual package. While council members receive a code violation report every month, this month's report was the first generated by the city's new code enforcement software called iWorkQ that went online in late June, according to City Manager Rex Thee. The cost of the software was $8,400 to start with a $5,000 per year maintenance and update agreement. Thee said the software should greatly improve the efficiency of the city code enforcement efforts, as well as the hiring of a second code enforcement officer, Aaron Hufty. Quote, "Once a case is started on a property, each action can be entered, and the software will prompt us whenever it is time to take the next step," Thee said. "Any officer or myself can pull up a case and have all of the information, from the violation to what actions have to be taken and what comes next, at our fingertips. It is a lot more efficient than our old paperwork system that has been in place for decades," he said. "I think it will help us resolve issues with properties that need attention in a much more timely manner," end quote. This month's report lists 36 reported violations that were investigated by code enforcement, one report of placing refuse in an alley that was cleared, three reports of trees on street corners that are blocking drivers' line of sight, and 32 violations regarding weeds and rubbish on properties. The council appointed Jeff Ennis and Clay Gardner to two open alternate seats on the Planning and Zoning Board of Adjustment, pending their acceptance of the appointments. Regarding a $103,000 expense listed on the accounts payable report, Thee informed the council that the bill was for the new Automated Weather Observation System, AWOS, being installed at the airport, and that 75% of the bill would be covered by a grant from Texas Department of Transportation. Quote, "The system allows pilots to pull up local weather on their cell phone and know exactly what the conditions are here at the airport long before they arrive," Thee said. Thee said the system would be operational after the Federal Aviation Administration made a final inspection, and said it should be operational in time for the 22nd annual fly-in breakfast scheduled for the morning of August 12th. The council also set a public hearing regarding the city's proposed 2023-2024 budget for its regularly scheduled meeting on August 22nd at 3 p.m. Total expenditures by the city for June were $962,000, with the bulk of the money going toward payroll and benefits, $43,800 for electricity and the bill for the AWOS system. Animal Control reported that in June, 31 dogs and 48 cats were impounded, along with three other animals, and that 53 of those were euthanized, while 29 were either adopted or picked up by their owners. Animal Control also reported picking up 19 dead animals off the roads. During June, the city issued 18 permits for residential construction and repairs, with an estimated value of the projects at $145,000, and five commercial permits, two for new construction and three for repairs, with a total value of $7,750,000. The bulk of that commercial valuations was $6,776,000 for the new construction of the QT convenience store being built on the site of the old Shopko store. Monahan's police department asked to keep doors locked. After a rash of vehicle break-ins and burglaries over the past few days, Monahan's police chief, Chris Quintana, wants to remind everyone to please lock your car and your homes. Quote, "We have had 10 burglaries and burglaries of vehicles in the past few days," Quintana said. "All of the vehicles that were burglarized showed no signs of forced entry," end quote. Entry to the two buildings that were burglarized, the Texan gas station on I-20 and Mr. C's convenience store, was forced. Quote, "We have good support from people calling in suspicious persons, but would like to remind everyone that if they see something suspicious, to please call us. We cannot respond if we do not know something is happening," Quintana said. While people should dial 911 if there is an active emergency, Quintana asked that to call in a suspicious person or other non-emergencies, citizens call the police station at 943-3254.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.